Welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews. I am your host, Chris Lukianenko, and I scour this big brand land of ours, looking under fermenters and behind mash tuns to find the best beer stories to share with you. The Beer Healer Interviews is now available on all major podcast services. If you like the show and want to help out, can I ask you to simply rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or your preferred podcast service? Just leave a few words and a rating and the podcast gods will do the rest. By doing this, you'll help others to discover the show more easily and hopefully get more people interested in this great industry that we call craft beer. So I'm in my 40s now. Remembering what I did last week or what date my kids' birthdays are is a bit of a challenge at times. I've too many other bits of important information to fit into my brain, like the lyrics to Milli Vanilli's 1988 debut All or Nothing. So things are a little bit hazy when I tell you that I think I remember being in Melbourne in early 2018 and I stumbled across a promo for a new beer brand called Brick Lane. I can't remember what I saw, but there were two brown bottles with blue and green labels for their lager and pale ale. And it led me to this lavish Instagram profile where they did one of those clever multiple post things that build a bigger picture. It was truly cool stuff and I was very impressed. 2.5 years later, that Brick Lane brewery I first came across is a little different to what existed back then. The brown bottles have disappeared in favour of cans, the range has expanded a bit, and a whole bunch of other stuff that I don't even know about. But you know what? I really want to know what's been going on. But you don't want to hear from me. So, to fill us in on the Brick Lane story, welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews, a couple of the co-founders, Managing Director Paul Bowker and Head Brewer John Selton. Welcome aboard, lads.
Cheers, mate.
Hey, Chris. How's it going?
I'm going very well. I did say that was going to be a short intro, but it was probably a little bit longer than I'd originally planned, so I apologise for that, but I had to get that off my chest.
I can't believe it's only been 2 years since that Instagram account used to exist and since you saw those initial brown bottles. Boy, it feels to me like a lifetime. I've certainly got a lot less hair than I did back then, that's for sure.
I don't know what I saw, whether it was a coaster or a poster or some sort of point of sale or maybe even the bottles themselves. I forget, but I remember going to the Instagram profile to find out who the hell you guys were, and this whole thing opened up in front of me, which was this lavish kind of mural that went across a whole bunch of Instagram posts, and I thought, this is going to be pretty bloody interesting. And then I don't feel like I heard much from you after that, maybe because I lived in Tasmania, but when you guys contacted me the other week, I was like, I want to know what's happened from then until now.
Yeah, I mean, it feels 2 years ago, but it genuinely feels like a bloody lifetime ago. But yeah, I guess we were pretty unusual in the way we started. We, we were pretty full on, and we started from scratch, and we were just so keen to do everything. Like, we wanted to build the brewery. We wanted to sort of work on like all our systems and processes, and importantly, we just like wanted to get some beer out into the market. And in hindsight, we probably got some stuff out into the market probably far ahead of where we should have. But that's all the enthusiasm at the time. You just want to do everything. And so I guess we look at that sort of initial sort of 6 months as really just a little bit of a trial to sort of get things moving a bit. And yeah, you look back then and it's almost a completely different business to what the actual business became.
Okay, so I'm not alone then. That's what was going through my head. Absolutely. Paul, what was your interest in beer before you got involved in Brick Lane?
Yeah, well, I've got, I've been through a whole heap of different things. And, before Brick Lane, I was involved in oil and gas of all things. But, I've always
done. Sounds like a natural starting point to go into beer from?
Well, I'm looking through the window into the brewery at the moment, and, there's a lot of similarities in terms of progress and lots of shiny stainless steel.
But, shiny stuff, yeah.
originally, I worked in corporate most of my career, but I spent about 10 years working in hospitality through everything from, functions and events through to waiting and, making coffees. There was no baristas back then. It was, you just made a coffee. But I've always had a close affinity to sort of food and wine mainly, and I've done quite a few vintages in wine and, different process, but, all was sort of broadly similar space. And when I sort of, like a lot of people, you reach a point and you just want to break out and do something different outside of the corporate world. And, food, hospitality, wine, beer, I mean, it was all stuff I was passionate about. And then had a chat to a few mates decided beer would be the path to take. And it just sort of started off from there as an idea. And then I like to tell everyone we met John Selton very early in the piece, and what was a small idea suddenly exploded to what we've got today. And I squarely blame John Selton, and I don't care about his lack of hair. He's to blame for this thing. You know?
Yeah. So, John, your transition into Brick Lane was maybe a little bit more traditional because you've had a pretty decent brewing history, haven't you?
Yeah, I've been in it for a little while. I mean, mind you, last night I was in on the AIBA virtual AIBA awards night, which was very nice,
actually,
but kind of awesome. Yeah, no, it was very nice, but also a little sad that, you know, it's a time of year where we all catch up with colleagues and have a few beers, and it's a real high point, I think, in the year for a lot of people in the industry. And seeing Tina win the award for best personality, it sort of puts you in your place a little bit when she's been around in the industry for, well, she'd hate me saying this, but almost as long as I've been alive, you know. I've been in brewing for about 10 years now, but luckily through my career I've had the opportunity to work and be mentored by a whole bunch of people who have spent multiple lifetimes, you know, for me in it, you know. Yeah. So there are people who've been around for a long time. I remember catching up with Dermot O'Donnell, I think it was last year or the year before, and he celebrated his 50th year in beer, which is astounding, you know. But before Brick Lane, I'd been always working in small breweries and craft breweries, and I'd done a startup just prior to Brick Lane as well with Mazin at Hawkers, and had a really awesome fun experience there, and had a chance to build a brewery from scratch, and met Paul and Bart and the other founders of Brick Lane early on in the piece, and I thought, oh geez, this sounds phenomenally exciting, you know, the scale of what the vision, the idea of what was going to happen. And it didn't take me too long to whip them into a state of frenzy at growing the project into something a lot bigger than what it was. I remember once this was an idea when it was first a sparkle in the eye of Paul. I think it was originally thought to be a small brew pub on the Lakes Taupo, probably at the in its very first inception. And boy, it's changed a bit since then, you know.
Bloody hell.
It did start out as a pretty small idea, but it sort of started to grow. And I remember absolutely distinctly myself and Bart had saw that John was looking around a bit. We put a bit of an ad out. Actually, we put it out in a few online posts, but including overseas. And anyway, John saw this this ad, and he came in, and we interviewed John. And literally, and within about 30 seconds, we said, "All right, you've got the job, and now let's just talk for an hour." Like the enthusiasm of John, like we were just absolutely blown away. We thought we were enthusiastic, and we just knew. Sometimes you just know immediately the right person is there, and you know, obviously John had all the credentials we needed, but the enthusiasm and passion, and despite like the massive workload and what we've gone through in 2 years, we haven't been able to knock it out of him, and it's like he's as fresh faced as he was in that first interview. So
yeah, less hair, but certainly enjoying the ride. That's for sure. But no, it's been a pretty exciting project. That time you were talking about, Chris, you know, right at the start, you know, in the early days, my focus was really building the place. So it was a pretty amazing project in that we got a chance to put a whole company together from scratch, you know, and for me that meant the construction phase of an entirely new greenfield site, you know, building a whole new purpose-built building to put a brewery inside, you know, building something just how I'd wanted it. It's a real dream project for a lot of brewers, and I'm really grateful to have had it. And we continue to run expansion projects and upgrades and adding capability and capacity and bits and pieces. And it just, you know, it's gotta say, it's gotta be one of the most fun beer jobs in Australia, I reckon I've got.
Cool. Well, we'll get onto all that expansion stuff, but I'll stick with the early days for a sec. Those two bottles that I drank, where were they brewed from? Were you with Hawker's contract brewing then initially, or?
Yeah, absolutely, at my alma mater. So this is one of the amazing things about the industry, right? You know, like typically a sort of a an operational person leaves a business, and in some businesses you'd be marched out the door,
never come back.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, asked to take yourself, put all your belongings in a black in a brown cardboard box, and be escorted out the building by security. But it's a testament to bloody how collaborative and how fun our industry is. And we had great support from Mazen and the team at Hawkers, you know, right at the start to have a bit of fun trial brewing a couple of batches. Those brown bottles came from, our very first kind of pilot brews that we did there at Hawkers, a couple of small market test things, some beer that we made just to circulate to kind of friends and shareholders and family, and just to keep the toe in the water, so to speak, as we put our brewery together. And, there's not many industries, I don't think, where there's that amazing kind of collaborative spirit where someone you'd typically think of as a competitor, you actually invite in and give a leg up.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, we're grateful for it, and we continue to chat constantly and, you know, flick ideas around and work together from time to time. And it's a testament to what a kind of special industry, I guess, we work
in.
It's
pretty cool, isn't it?
It's amazing. It's amazing. You know, same product type in the same city. And yet,
Stone's,
you know,
probably.
Exactly. Yet we really give each other a leg up, you know, and hopefully we've sort of done a bit through the years to repay the favor and to help out as well. It was that initial beer was out of Hawkers, which was great because it was a system, you know, that I put together myself and knew like the back of my hand, and was running just a couple of months earlier. So it was a great way to do it.
And so initially you were thinking you might do a brew pub model. What changed to make you think you're going to put in this pretty sizable brewery instead?
When you first start these, and we're no different to a lot of people. I mean, beer, like a few industries, but, you know, beer like I've never seen another industry is absolute passion. Like, it is run and driven on passion. And we were pretty passionate and, you know, a little bit naive at first, but loved the industry and spoke to a lot of people and just knew we had to get involved and make a difference. And we looked at the traditional sort of brew pub model, and that's, you know, the natural place to start. But through a lot of late nights, started to have a really good look through the whole industry and tried to look at, you know, where we could actually make a difference. I mean, there's 600, 700, and the number sort of changes a bit, I guess, but there's a lot of small breweries out there, and they're all, you know, pretty much all incredible, doing hugely exciting things, and we drink all their beers often, and we love them all. And then we thought, like, where can we actually really make an impact? And we thought, well, there's not actually that many independent breweries that have built a world-class brewery pretty much from scratch, and one that can be used, I guess, not just by Brick Lane, but for used by others in the industry to really make a difference. And that was sort of the idea that we sort of came up with. And because sort of what happened, like, we looked through the market and we saw at the time, you know, Feral and Pirate Life and Four Pines are all sort of getting bought out at about this time, and we thought, well, what if we could actually build something that, you know, didn't get bought out? And I've got no problem with people getting bought out, you know, that's business and it's life, but what if we built something that was long-term sustainable? And that was the idea. And then, like, the obvious big hurdle with that is that's great, but my pockets, John's pockets, Bart, Andrew, other people involved in the start of the business, you know, clearly we can't fund this thing that we've built. So how do we do it but keep our own independence and our own direction and strategy and do it the way we want? So that's when we put together I've gone back and had a look through it, and it's a little bit naive, but maybe not too naive, a bit of a business plan, and shopped it around to a bunch of people, and managed to collect about 30 odd people who were happy to invest in the project. And that's where it started from.
I find it interesting that you were going to build a brewery of that size, like in a pretty challenging market. Because, I mean, Victoria is known for being a stranglehold of CUB with their various mainstream offerings. And then, you know, Lion developed Furphy to appeal to the whole big V drinker. Plus, he had quite a few pretty established smaller breweries in the state. At any point in time, do you think, nah, that market's a little bit too crowded? Maybe we need to be careful?
No, it's almost the opposite. And, you know, and I still think it's almost the opposite. Like, I look at back then and even much stronger now. I look at beer itself and, you know, and John will articulate it as well, but it's such a beautiful, beautiful liquid. It's a beautiful product. It's been around for a long time. People globally love it, Australians in particular, and it should be absolutely celebrated. It shouldn't be something that's in decline. Like, we believe beer should be increasing its market share year on year, not broadly declining. And we thought, you know, inherently this is a product that people want, and if we can make it as best as we possibly can and work with the entire industry from, you know, the small players right through to the big players to actually grow this pie, then there's a real opportunity. And that's obviously not without its risk, because the day-to-day environment is incredibly competitive. But, you know, this is long-term for us, and, you know, our view is long-term, beer is magnificent and there's a place for it. And if we do it right and do it well and get it to as many people as we can, then there's a sustainable business model there.
Yeah, fair enough. And, John, was that sort of part of your plan in terms of the first two beers in those brown bottles? I mean, you had the pale and the lager that I mentioned earlier, you know, sort of not entry, sort of entry-level beers, but to maybe attract some of those mainstream drinkers, those drinkers that are drinking the Furphy or the VB or whatever the case may be, to help you get that start. Is that why you didn't go with a, you know, a big hoppy pale ale first up?
Yeah, look, we've got an interesting philosophy here at Brick Lane. We do a lot of talking about it internally. We just come out of an NPD meeting, actually. And, you know, I think one of the things that we love doing is beers that people love drinking. You know what I mean? Like, we've got when we built the brewery here at Dandenong South, you know, we made sure that we put enough flexibility into all of our process equipment and into all the stuff we got to brew, you know, a huge range of beer styles. You know, it's not just a tuned, say, lager brewery, this one. It's not just a brewery where you can only do, just infusion mashing, for example. You know, we really built a huge amount of flexibility in so that we can make, you know, a giant gamut of stuff. And six, you know, I love beers that that people love to consume in volume. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's a real testament to the quality of a beer when people go back for more, you know what I mean, and for lots. We're also not a small brewery, so, you know, we love brewing brands of scale. But that said, we also love having fun around the edges. So, I mean, just recently, you know, we've through our partners, but then ourselves as well, we brew some styles that sort of are a bit more out at the pointy end as well. We've got a bit of a sort of a top secret skunk work sort of project here going on in the brewery where I don't even tell Paul what's going on, really. We've got a couple of little projects that are top secret, small volume, pointy end release stuff. Just released our all together collaboration with the guys at Carwin and at Other Half. In aid of the hospitality workers affected by COVID, and that was a kind of a really amazingly hopped out hazy IPA, New England style IPA, and God, it was fun to brew. Cool. But I think the core brands that we make, and certainly my passion is around iterating and making beers that are technically really well made, that are really well balanced, and that are super enjoyable. You know, adjectives like challenging, for example, I don't like necessarily in the core beers that I make. I think we make beers that are there to be, you know, that are there to be enjoyed. You know, that are there to be, create great community, create great conversations, great sort of occasions. And that kind of thread, I think, runs through a lot of our approach to brewing and to a lot of the brands we make here.
Got a question for you. Do you like the show? And do you want to help support the industry that we all love by spreading the craft beer gospel far and wide? Well, there is one thing you can do, and it doesn't involve putting your hand in your pocket and pulling out your credit card. Nope. Just click the Apple Podcast link in the show notes and leave a review and a rating. The Apple Podcast gods do the rest, and you will feel all warm and fuzzy for doing your bit for craft beer. That's all. Back to the interview. So as you said before, like, you know, that first 6 months in the brown bottles was kind of just like a dip in your toe in the water, and things really sort of started to happen when you got the Dandenong site up and running. And it was 18 months from when you originally started talking about the brew to when Dandenong opened its doors. Is that right?
Yeah, it was probably about, maybe a little bit less than that. But it was an incredibly quick build, basically. So we, We built the actual building itself. We designed it. It's all bespoke designed as a brewery. And all the equipment came from various places, you know, came from the beating heart. The brew house came from Germany. Some of the packaging line was Germany. Some was Italian, some Swiss. There's a bit of everything in there. But we basically at the same – we spent a bit of time working around the planning and procurement, and then – within less than a 12-month period from turning dirt, we were producing beer, which was kind of incredible. And, you know, at one point we had, you know, half the floor inside the brewery was dirt, half was concrete. And at the same time we had Germans, Italians, Australian tradesmen, pipe welders all working in this space together, trying madly to get things ready for summer peak of 18. And it was an unbelievable job of project management, and John had a big role in that. And we also had a couple of people, old heads, I guess, who have been around the industry for a long time, giving us some support too. So it was an incredibly quick process. But yeah, we released beers under our current brand, I guess, September of 2018. So about 18 months ago.
And that was the One Love Pale, which was that a different beer to the original pale, and then it was the what's it called? The base lager. Were they the same beers into new cans, or you scrapped them and went with something brand new?
They were tweaked for the new facility. Yep. So yeah, you know, the idea is those first ones were. I guess they're also a bit of proof that I hopefully that I knew what I was doing for the shareholders to say that yes, I could indeed make beer, and I wasn't just good at talking about it, but could actually do it as well. But then when we got into the brewery, we used those ones as inspiration, or we used them as a kind of a testing ground for some ideas that we wanted to do, and for some malt and hop combinations that we'd like to use, and for some process choices that we wanted to make. And then we adapted them essentially and tuned them for this new brewing. And I tell you what, at the end of that long commissioning process, which was so much fun. I tell you what, a great opportunity to work with, like, as you said, as Paul said, a couple of old hats in the industry who have done this around the world in some of Australia's and the world's largest breweries. It was a great, mentoring opportunity for me to learn a lot about, you know, project management, brewery design, and, and contractor management, and putting one of these things together. But that commissioning period for me was kind of one of the most exciting, where we started turning things on and, connecting things up and commissioning this plant that we'd spent the previous sort of 12 months building and putting together with our own hands. That period was really fun. And the first beers we released were kind of the culmination of, of all of that. So it was a pretty special moment for us. And it was shared with a fair few people. So we had, like Paul said, a little army of Germans and Italians and Swiss and Australians and trades from from Australia and internationally, and it felt like it was a pretty special moment, those first brews. Awesome. And especially the first package beer as well. Pretty big milestone. It was great fun.
And that's obviously the One Love Pale Ale, which is an absolutely awesome smashable beer. One that I can get in Tassie, which is great. You know, Centennial, Amarillo, Mosaic and Galaxy, if I'm not mistaken. Beautiful combination of hops, those ones. What was your inspiration for that beer?
Well, we were given a bit of free rein, and we made the beers that we love to drink, essentially. You know, we wanted something that was full of our favorite kind of hop cultivars, you know, and there's a couple of our darlings in there from Australia. You know, we've got this pretty amazing hop industry in Australia, growing some really some pretty amazing new hops and interesting kind of really unique flavors. And it's kind of a two-edged sword in a way. You know, we got these amazing hops here, but they're also under such demand globally that sometimes it's hard for us to secure enough of them here in Australia, because the flavors are really that unique. The approach to breeding is very different to anywhere else in the world, and the kind of the flavor spaces that these guys come up with are pretty special and unique. We married that with a couple of our favorite North American cultivars out of Washington State and Oregon State, and there were some really some some really lovely lots of hops. We managed to select those first brews and for our first year of production. And we sort of married it with a grain bill that was really simple. You know, we didn't want this to be a sort of a stodgy or cloying or flabby sort of pale ale. We wanted it to be more down the sort of the English summer ale end of the spectrum, really something that could be enjoyed in summertime, that's delicate, that's light potted, but that's also kind of soft and pillowy. So there's a fair whack of malted wheat and flaked wheat that goes in it as well to give it this this nice softness without it being too stodgy or flabby. So that was the thinking with this beer.
Yeah, it's an absolute ripper. So you got these couple of new beers out in these probably flash looking cans. How did the market embrace the new brand? I mean, early on there was a bit of a bit of fanfare around some of, let's call them some of your celebrity investors. Did that kind of help or hinder you once you were really in the market with the cans?
Yeah, I mean, we have got some people, I guess, who have backed the business and, you know, they're well known, like people know their names. Yeah. And they're bloody, universally, they're bloody great people. And, you know, I speak to all of them certainly regularly. You know, they love catching up with John to hear about the beer. So first and foremost to us, they're just great people to have involved in the business. We've never really set out to sort of run around town with posters of whether it's, you know, there's, you know, Dan Carter, Billy Slater, Tim Horan, Mick Malloy, Eddie McGuire. I mean, it's no secret who's involved. Yeah. We don't keep it a secret, but
yep.
You know, sort of flog them as, you know, buy our beer because these guys are involved. it's more that I think people have found interest that they were. But, you know, from my perspective, and, you know, people look at that as a positive and negative, but, you know, I just look at it from, like everything, you know, personal relationships. I mean, they're bloody all tremendous people. They're all there for advice. And, you know, John and I have made mistakes along the way, and we know if we get something wrong or there's an issue we can't quite navigate through, we can pick up the phone to any of these people and they'll just give us great advice. So I don't really look at it as an external thing, but internally, like, it's just been a huge benefit for us to have all this experience of what are mainly self-made people involved, and they're not working in the business day by day, but they're just there if you need them. And to me, it's been a huge, huge advantage to have it.
So how would you describe that first year from, you know, September 2018 with a brand new brewery? What one word would you use to describe it?
Just thrilling. Every day was thrilling.
Cool.
It was new. It was every day was genuinely every day was different. We had our sort of created in isolation processes and systems, but until you actually push that first case or keg out of the brewery, you just don't know what's in front of you. And still to this day, like, genuinely every single day there's something new happening in the business. John mentioned we had NPD this morning, and, you know, we had this wide-ranging sort of debate around some different exciting beers we've got coming up. And, like, genuinely, there's not a day that's not thrilling for us every day.
I couldn't agree more. You know, it's just been so much fun, you know. And the other thing is the opportunity to work with a great team as well. You know, like, it started off a project team of, you know, three people maybe working on this company when it first started, and we've seen that grow into a fully sort of fitted out company now with people, the right people sort of in the right roles. It feels like we've really got now, and in my side of the business, in the operations side, you know, it's just this team of bloody gifted, talented brewers, of wonderful packaging professionals, of excellent engineering capability, wonderful quality people, great planners. It's just you know, seeing that come together as well has been really, really fun. It's sort of you get all the kind of the brewer geek in me got all the, you know, the fun to begin with in seeing the place built and in commissioning the place. And then there's been this subsequent kind of phase that's even better, I guess, of putting the team together and just seeing everyone kind of come together to make a pretty special organization.
So how many staff are at the brewery now?
We're about in the business, we're around 50 people now, and it's probably split 50-50 between sort of brewing operations, so, you know, brewing, packing, health and safety, quality, warehousing. So yeah, about a 50-50 split. So it's still a you know, you sort of lose track of it a little bit, but we're still at the size where we're a really close-knit team, and, you know, everyone knows everyone's names and everyone's familiar, and we've still got a small business sort of feel. And, you know, it's always the challenge. You want to keep that as long as you possibly can. And I guess the way we've done it is just by bringing in great people into the business. And, you know, and John's team's testament to that. I mean, the yeah. quality of, you know, brewers and other people he's got in there is just sensational. And same on the sales and the back office front. You know, we've had great people involved, and we've got a lot of people now who are ticking over 2 years at Brick Lane or 12 months at Brick Lane, and it's always a thrill when you see that happen. It's yeah, it's pretty exciting.
Speaking of great people, you've just added one of my favourite people in the industry, the fantastic Zoe Ottaway, into the marketing team. Great hire, in my opinion. It's funny, I was talking to her about it, and she's like really pumped to be there, obviously. And we're just sort of talking about it, you guys, in comparison to some of the other breweries that she's worked with and that sort of thing. And I sort of said to her, I said, you know, how do you describe Brick Lane at a party? From the outside looking in, you've got this really strong looking brand. And it feels mature, and you're a big brewery, but in reality, you're really just a pup. So it's hard. I don't know. I find it hard to describe you guys as a brand and where you're at, because I feel like you feel a bit more mature than you really are. Have I explained that well? I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're, you know, in a lot of ways, we're immature in our personal lives and in business lives for a couple of years, but yeah, it's a difficult one. I mean, we still feel like because it's such an open environment, the way we work, like there's very clear roles in the business, but any role speaks to any other role. So it almost feels a little bit friendly and family and down to earth. And the way we've designed it, that's not just within our, you know, the own people that work with Brick Lane, but, you know, as you know, I mean, we make beers along with a lot of other people as well. So even the people that, you know, use some of the equipment that we've got in here and make beers here, they've effectively got the keys to the place, and, you know, it's not uncommon. You know, and I could probably wander out there at any time into the production side, and you just bump into people from other breweries who are, you know, whether they're doing some stuff in the lab or they're brewing a beer that day. And we run such an open house that I think that sort of helps with that environment. But on the Zoe front, and, you know, clearly she's put you up to making those nice comments.
she's a weapon.
But talk about a weird timing. So she started like literally the week of COVID. baptism of fire for Zoe. Yeah. He's been bloody awesome. So we love having him.
So obviously you've got a little bit of spare capacity in the brewery to allow this contract operation stuff sort of to happen. At some stage, is the plan to actually just, you know, really use up that capacity yourselves and go far and wide with these pretty looking cans?
Nah, I mean, our philosophy is, you know, it goes right back to the beginning, you know, about we want to grow the beer market as a whole, and not just little pockets of it, just not at pointy end or at, you know, more mainstream end. Like, we want to grow the market as a whole. So we've got this incredible equipment that, you know, John has spent, you know, far too much money on, but it's quite incredible. And it's been pretty bloody selfish of us to keep it to ourselves. So it's a key part of our business that wherever we can help other people and, you know, open up our brewery to others that may not have access to, whether it's, you know, packing formats, whether it's, you know, our, you know, crossflow filter, whether it's the things we can do in the brew house, if we can open that up and let others use this equipment, that's for the betterment of the industry. And that's what we're trying to do. You know, us, if we can grow the industry and lead that charge and work collaboratively with the independent breweries, the smaller breweries, and work with the big breweries. They make amazing products as well, and grow the pie. That's a good thing. And for us, one way we can do that is give up-and-coming breweries and more established independent and other breweries access to equipment they otherwise couldn't put their hands on.
Is that good for you too, John? Do you get involved with those breweries and help them out, or are they just sort of leave them to their...
No, absolutely. It's a big part of my job. So there's benefits all the way through. You know, we're brewing a huge diversity of different beer styles, some non-beer products. You know, we're making, near beer style products, alcohol-free beer, ciders, non-alcoholic beverages. You know, we're doing so many things. But, you know, in my sort of passion, you know, on the brewing front, it exposes us to a whole range of different products, a whole range of different raw materials, a whole range of different approaches to brewing. So, you know, there's often jokes about, you know, ask of, you know, three brewers how best to make a pilsner, and you get 20 different answers, you know. But there's you know, you're exposed to different approaches to brewing, different ideas, and it's great for me personally, you know, taking these brands. It's a huge act of trust, really, you know, in partner brewing for us. A brewer will come to us, and it's their baby, you know, it's their child that they've created, and they're entrusting us with looking after it and growing it up into international distribution or international production. And it's something that we take super seriously and with a great deal of pride. You know, it's for us, the partner brewing piece isn't, you know, it's not just about, say, filling surplus capacity. I wish I had surplus capacity. No, where it's all really well utilized, and it's a real intrinsic part of what we do. It's about growing these brands up, adapting them to the larger plant here, and also driving kind of continuous improvement projects as well, you know, making the beer taste as best as it can. And I think some of the proudest points in my career are when those beers that we partner brew for others go on to win like ARBA gold medals, or when the brewers come to us and say, gee, this is tasting better than it ever has, or you've done, you know, this is a fantastic manifestation of this brand. You've done an excellent job. And that's what my team really kind of thrives on. We love doing that. And if we were just making our own brands, sure, we make a little growing stable of brands, but we probably wouldn't be exposed to the great diversity of styles that we brew here at the moment. I mean, just last week we brewed maybe 8 or 9 different, you know, very different diverse styles of beer. They weren't all just, say, pale ales, you know. And that's great fun.
Speaking of new beers and COVID, you know, have you gone with the whole COVID thing? Because you launched a new beer right smack bang in the middle of it, pretty much, with the Supernova IPA, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, COVID for us has been, we moved on it very early, and, you know, like most people, we moved on it early, just around keeping our staff and suppliers, customers, and others safe. I mean, that was the key priority initially. So we, very early on, before lockdown, we moved everyone to a work from home environment. Everyone that is, other than John's team, because, you know, it's clearly a little bit difficult to do that from home.
Yeah, brew from home.
but we, from right off the bat, and John, you know, and also Alex, who works across people and culture, I guess, put a really good plan in place to completely segregate shifts within the brewery. So we had, you know, I guess, non-overlapping shifts in the brewery, but we also put the brewery into lockdown. So the only people allowed in there were operational staff. So I had my nose pressed up against the window a few times, but that was close as I got. So we went early and really strict on around our processes and how we did it. And everyone's been kept safe through it. I mean, we've had no real incidents. The hardest thing for us has been, how do you keep everyone involved and feeling like they're part of their work family? And, you know, we were, I guess, sort of fortunate, but we were very deliberate that we didn't want to lose any staff through the process. So we kept everyone on, and all our staff agreed to work reduced hours. So everyone moved back to, most people moved back to sort of 2 to 3 days per week, which was a massive hit and a massive ask. And it's kind of amazing that, you know, you've got such a strong group of people that they all willingly said, absolutely, we'll do that to keep us all together. So we've tried as best we can to keep people involved, you know, no different to anyone else. We've, you know, we do Zoom calls, we do all those other sorts of things. But yeah, it's been personally tough, I think, for everyone in the business to have their own home lives, which are incredibly difficult, but then also to try and keep in touch with work when you're at home 2 days a week. It's not been easy, but we've kept everyone through it, and we're coming out the other side now. You know, hours are starting to gradually increase within the business, and our key aim is to get everyone back into full time as soon as we possibly can, and we're not too far away.
Nice. And John, have you been happy with the response to Supernova?
Yeah, it's gone great. Yeah, we love it here, and we get constant positive feedback on it. So, a couple of mates in Queensland up at Brewski gave us some really nice slaps on the back over it just last week, and you know, we love the brand and I'm just glad that it's out there in the wild now. We've got a whole bunch of interesting hobby beers coming out as well over the next couple of months, some of which are top secret, some of which are already out there. So, I mean, another one that's been really fun has been the Altogether collaboration that we've done with the Carwin guys. I mean, this is a style of beer that everyone usually ribs me for because I'm not a huge I don't gravitate towards kind of New England IPAs or hazy styles of beer, but this was so much fun to brew and it was absolutely delicious as well. So and nice to be part of something that's bigger than ourselves as well. It's nice to see photos down from down at the Queen Vic markets where all the sort of the proceeds from this beer went into meal packs that are being handed out to hospitality workers by our staff down there. And it's great to see we've done something like what 500 meal packs, Paul, or more than that, I think now, right?
Yeah, oh, it's incredible. I'm out there today as well, handing a few out, and it's just brilliant. I mean, you know, hospitality's been the biggest hit, the hardest hit, and a lot of industries have, but they're particularly hard because of the demographic of hospitality workers. And not only to get out there and, you know, hand out a few meals, but again, it's another thing that, you know, our staff can actually get out there and interact, you know, in a safe way. It's bloody good project.
It's the fun part as well for me is the beer. Like the beer itself was really great, was really delicious, and we've had it alongside some of the other great iterations that were brewed by other breweries in Australia. And it's really fun to do this. It's not often that it happens where a whole bunch of breweries brew a similar or the same formulation of a beer.
Yep.
And so that was great fun to do it with those other guys and to taste it alongside those other breweries. It's always nice to see those small subtle differences from brewery to brewery, and we're super proud of ours.
So in sort of wrapping this thing up, guys, what's the one big thing we need to watch out for in terms of Brick Lane this coming 12 months?
Well, I think that from my end, there's I think what you'll see is a huge diversity in the beers that we release. You know, we've spent 18 months making sure we got all our sort of core range of beers right. We've put out a few interesting things, like we've got some like Red Hoppy, Supernova, a few other things. But for me, I think it's going to be to really now start to fill the range out and get some real different, exciting beers out into the market to support, I guess, our core range beers.
Beautiful. What about you, John?
Yeah, I got a couple of things to look forward to, I reckon. There's that. You know, there's all the new product development. We're putting in some pilot brewing capability here as well, which is going to be a great little feeder into our new product development. So, and great work for the brewers, you know, to work on formulations and iterations and kind of new process design stuff as well on the small little pilot brew house. I'm super stoked about that. We're putting in some big capital works that are going to really help with capacity and throughput and some utilities expansions. It's not all that sexy, this stuff, but it certainly makes our lives happier as brewers when we've got a really wonderfully ticking along plant, and also I'm really looking forward to a couple of the new products from our partner brewers that we're going to be making, and some of the new partners that we're in the process of bringing on. We're signing on the dotted line with a couple of new people soon, and that means again interactions with new brewers, new product types, whole new product categories, and that stuff's so much fun for our team.
Sounds good. Sounds like we need to book in another chat in about 12 months' time, and
Once the social distancing stuff's all over, it'll be lovely to show you around as well, mate. Like you should absolutely next time you're in Melbourne town.
Mate, I am so keen to get back to Melbourne and go and see Collingwood game. Oh, you've got no idea. It's been a while. I need to get back over there. Need the footy to start. Just hopefully Eddie can sort it out for us. Tell Eddie I said hi, by the way.
Certainly will.
It's going to be great. When I do, I'll jump in the car and travel. It's about 30 minutes south of southeast of Melbourne town?
Yeah,
pretty much
southeast.
On the M1? Yep. Nice work. I'll come and say g'day and try some beers down there. It'd be great. So, look, guys, thanks for reaching out recently and sending me those Supernovas. That was absolutely fantastic. A very, very drinkable beer. I did love that beer. It's an absolute ripper. And, thanks for engaging with me today. I've loved the chat. Love finding out more about what you guys are up to. And I think exciting times ahead for the peeps at Brick Lane. Thanks, guys.
That's it, mate. Thanks, Chris. Thanks, mate. Always good to chat, buddy.
Great to speak to you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, fellas. Thanks for listening. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you have an interesting beer story and want to be a guest on the Beer Healer interviews, send me a message via my Facebook page. And once again, if you want to help out the show, a simple rate and review on Apple Podcasts or a follow, like, or share on any other podcast service will do the trick. I'll catch you soon.